Earlier this week, I got to do a really cool thing at my son's preschool. They did Donuts with Dads, where all the dads from the forest, we all got to go and we got to eat donuts with our kids, get to see the classroom, get to do some activities with them. It was super adorable. It was super fun. And while I was doing this, my son showed me this project that they got to work on. There's this book about a pigeon that's really annoying. If you have kids, you know what I'm talking about. But the idea is that you don't want to let this pigeon take something that's important to you, right? And so each of the kids got to draw the pigeon, and then right under it, don't let the pigeon take blank that they didn't want the pigeon to take, right? And so like one girl wrote, like, don't let the pigeon take my little sister. That's adorable, right? Another little boy wrote, don't let the pigeon take my dad's pizza bus. Now that sounds weird, but I brought a picture to make that make more sense. His dad owns and operates a school bus called Pizza ISD. It's a food truck, right? And so really it was like, don't let the dad take my pizza bus. That's what he meant by that. And then we get to my son's, right? Which says, don't let the pigeon take my footballs. And so like, we have like, don't take my family or don't take my dad's livelihood. I can't do without one of my 17 footballs that I own in the house. I brought a picture of all the footballs that I tried to gather this morning. And this is only a fraction of them. And it really kind of put in perspective how much my son kind of values, things from like football compared to, you know, like family. And that's okay. I think the other funny thing though, is that like, it is this beautiful example of the way in which that like, how we understand our words and the impact that our words might have, whether we want to realize that or not. And this is an important conversation when it comes to the book of James. Because as we're finishing up this series, we've got this week and next week for the book of James, what we see is this continued conversation around the practical nature of our faith. And today, we're going to see James really talk about the importance of our words. Because what he wants to do is he wants to have a conversation with all these faithful Jewish followers of Jesus who are trying to understand how it is that they can live and operate in the world. And they've started to get themselves into trouble because they've just started to spout off things thinking, well, as long as I'm living faithfully, other words, my mouth and the words that come out of it, they don't matter as much. And so this is how James addresses it in James chapter 3, where it says, not many of you should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. So he starts off by explaining that there is a difference between somebody who's a teacher and somebody who's not a teacher. And his argument is this idea that if you're going to be a church leader, that you should be held to a different standard. And I get that. And I'm on board with that. Like when I became a pastor, I was like, yeah, like I should be seen and have to live by a different standard in order to help uplift others. But then what James does is he keeps going. Because for him, what he wants to do is he's not just talking about those who are teachers, but he's trying to talk to everybody. And he says this. He says, we all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It's a restless evil. It's full of deadly poison. With the tongue, we praise our Lord the Father, and with it, we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. This is the pitch that James is making, that the words that we say have so much power and can do so much good and so much harm that we need to deeply pay attention to them. And I know what you're thinking. You're like, yeah, Jimmy, but like sticks and stones may break my bones. And like, yeah, but like words we have to unpack in therapy a decade later, right? At like $200 an hour. And if we know this, right, like we understand that we have all been the recipient of somebody who said something to us that made so much more of a damaging impact on our lives than anything physical that they could have done. And if we know this and we understand this, why is it that we pay so little care to the words that we use, knowing that when we use them, it's harmful to another person? And the reality is the reason why we use such harmful language is it actually benefits us. See, one of the best ways to develop a relationship, one of the best ways to bond with another person is to find some common enemy or find some common source of opposition. And one of the best ways to oppose them is to trash talk them, right? And so this is why some of their closest friends and coworkers that you have at your job are the people that you see eye to eye with so that you can make fun of the other people at your job. That doesn't happen here at St. Andrew, obviously, right? But you all can think of like coworkers that you've gotten incredibly close with, that you've bonded with over the fact that you both disliked the same person and wanted to make fun of that person, either to their face or behind their back. The irony, though, is as good as it is at creating like a bonding experience, as good as it is actually connecting us with another person, it actually harms us so much more in the long run. Because while it does connect us with them, it only connects us in the short term. This is why so often we end up moving on from that job and that friendship falls away. Because the friendship wasn't built on trust. It wasn't built on respect. How can you trust and respect somebody that you know can trash talk others behind their back? Like, that's not somebody you ever want to give your full trust to. And you didn't have a genuine relationship with them. And so while it feels good, while it benefits us genuinely in the short term by giving us community, it actually harms us in the long run because it's not long-lasting community. And even more so, it ends up reshaping our identity. Because our identity is shaped so deeply by the things that we say with our mouth. And this is how you end up with, the old idioms, right? Of like, you know, that guy curses like a sailor, right? Or that person lies like a used car salesman, right? Like the way that we talk ends up actually shaping us and shaping our identity, whether we want it to or not. And the funniest place that I see this play out, honestly, is like anytime somebody's like on reality TV or anytime somebody gets caught on a hot mic. Because what ends up happening is they say something that is objectively horrible. And then everybody, you know, gets upset at the person because objectively they said something that is horrible. And then they come out with just the most like AI written version of an apology ever. I apologize to anybody who I might have offended with my words. They do not reflect my true nature. Like, yes, they do. They do reflect your true nature. Because you probably weren't wearing a mask of a horrible, vile person, but deep down, you're actually a good person. Like, in reality, what we do is we wear the mask that we want everybody to see so that we can hide the fact that we want to say the horrible, vile things. And it's not a thing where it's like, oh, that doesn't reflect my true nature. It was taken out of context. The reality is like, we said what we said. We harmed who we harmed. We just don't like the fact that now we have to, like, look into the mirror over it. And sometimes we do genuinely believe, like, oh, that's not my true nature. That's not really who I am. And I think some parts of that is because of the fact that, like, we didn't set out to be that person. It just kind of happens slowly over small little choices, small little words over time, like these incremental changes. It's why James's analogy of the rudder is so appropriate, right? Because like, it's very funny, earlier in our worship run through this week, we all learned that very few of us understand how big boats and ships work. Because it was like, we were trying to understand the difference between like a propeller and a rudder, and all of us were completely lost, but we went to Bible school, so it's okay. But effectively, like the point of a rudder is that like, no matter how big the propeller gets, like a tiny rudder can actually completely re-divert a ship. But it's really hard to turn a ship on a dime. No, what actually ends up happening is that, like, you ought to do small little incremental changes as far out as possible when it's easier to course correct. Because when you can do that, you can actually set the ship on the path that you want it to go on, and then all too often, you just have to kind of make sure it hasn't shifted at all. A more modern analogy that I was thinking about this week is that of golf. And because, I don't know if you know this, but like if you are taking a driver to hit a golf ball, if your driver, the face of that is off by 1 degree, it will result in your ball going 15 to 20 yards to the left or to the right. 1 degree. The tiniest little fraction of something can result in the long run, in the trajectory of things, with this massive, massive difference from where you were trying to go and where you ended up. We know this is the idea of like the butterfly effect, right? Where like butterfly flaps its wings and then something horrible happens somewhere else down the road, right? And the reality is like we think of that all too often as like other things, but it affects us as well. Because we can't ever possibly comprehend the ramifications of an action. My favorite example of this is, and I've talked about this before, but it's been a couple years, and so I wanted to dust it off because today is the Super Bowl, and like it's my last time to talk about football for like 5 months. So my favorite example of this is the 1968 Buffalo Bills, all right? Now, as sad and depressing as the Buffalo Bills have been, you should know that they've always been that way. And the 1968 Buffalo Bills were the worst team in the league. They finished with only one win on the season. That set them up to get the number one pick in the draft. They took a gentleman by the name of O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson ends up going to Buffalo. As a result of him playing in Buffalo, he ends up meeting a woman named Nicole. He and Nicole end up getting married. As a result of them getting married, some things happened, and we watched the news, and it was really horrible and awful in the 90s, right? As a result of that, O.J. Simpson hired a man by the name of Robert Kardashian to be his lawyer. That ended up catapulting the Kardashian name into kind of like a C-tier list of celebrity, but just famous enough that his kids were able to leverage that into Hollywood fame. And it is because of that, the Buffalo Bills are responsible for us having Keeping Up with the Kardashians. Because they lost the game by 3 points. Now, that's what reality TV looks like. And the ramifications go further than there. They've done a little bit of study on this, and they've realized, and this is not just all the Kardashians, but they were really kind of like the tip of the spear as far as that brand of reality TV, where like that brand of reality TV emphasized the importance of drama, emphasized the importance of self-confidence and self-assuredness, and fighting with others to get your way and to prove your point. And it's actually like started to rewire the brain of humanity because of the influence that they've had. And sure enough, about like 6-7 years after the Kardashians first got on the TV and kind of like spearheaded that mentality, we had what is to me one of the funniest moments in football history, and I can't do it justice. And so I brought a clip to show you what I believe to be is the funniest moment in football history, and it was 11 years ago this season.
Down to the field and then Aaron Edwards.
Joe, thank you so much, Richard. Let me ask you the final play. Take me through it.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a sorry receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're gonna get. Don't you ever talk about me.
Talking about you.
Crabtree, don't you open your mouth about the best. Or I'm gonna set it for you real quick. L.O.B.
All right, before, and Joe, back over to you.
Right, well, there's...
You just watch Aaron Andrews' face be like, oh my gosh. The camera's got, we gotta cut away, somebody do something. The funny thing about that is that like, he just won the conference championship. He's going to the Super Bowl and he made the game winning play. How is he not on cloud nine? Because what we found out is that the way he was operating with that mentality, with that level of anger, is actually the result of him insulting the other team on his sideline. Because when you insult or make fun of another person, it actually highlights the amygdala like a Christmas tree in our brain. What's the amygdala? I'm so glad you asked. I went to Bible college, so I understand these things. The amygdala is responsible for our defensive posture. For fight or flight, it's responsible for fight. The thing is when we insult another human being, like you know he was doing on the sideline, it doesn't actually help us vent. It doesn't actually help us feel better. It actually works us up even more. It makes us more angry. It makes us more defensive. It makes us less self-aware. To where we end up going out and we start saying things that we don't truly believe that we would say. And for the record, I like Richard Sherman. He's a great analyst. He was a great player. And he had a moment where he allowed his desire to insult another person to completely take over his life. And this is completely antithetical to how Jesus himself operated, right? Because Jesus himself, he gets up on the cross. And as he's up on the cross, it talks about how people are like actually making fun of him the entire time. It says that they're hurling insults at him. It says that the crowd is laughing at him and calling for his death. And know that like, this is the man who has the full power and the weight of God. He has the ability to do incredible miracles. He also has the ability to smite people. And in that moment, with his understanding of humanity, with his understanding of our brains, with his understanding of our hearts and our souls, he demonstrates how we ought to be and the posture we ought to take by calling out, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do." That in a moment where he would have been justified in hurling insults back at them, where he would have been justified in saying that you're going to reap what you sow, in a moment where he could have had a Richard Sherman-like outburst, he welcomes the thief next to him into paradise out of love. Because when we use that kind of language, when we go out of our way to offer forgiveness, to offer love, it has the opposite effect. It makes us more self-aware. It allows us to do a better job of doing our own self-analysis, to find our own flaws and to grow from them and to become more of a loving and complete human being. This is what Jesus understood. And so that even in his final breaths, he was teaching us how to operate. And so when James is sitting there saying, you have to understand how to tame the tongue, you have to understand that he's not saying that we have to learn how to control it so that we can use it as a weapon at any point. He's saying, don't allow it to take you down a path that you can't course correct. And this is built up even further with the book of Ephesians. We're in Ephesians 4. This is how Paul teaches. It says, that, however, is not the way of life you learned when you heard about Christ, and you were taught in him in accordance with the truth that is in Jesus. You were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. We're called to build up others. That this idea of the voice that God has given us is so powerful and has so much ability that we can use it to benefit others if we put off our own selfish desires. And the brilliance of that is it makes us the version that God had created us to be in the first place. A man who exemplifies this is a guy by the name of Bob Goff. Now, if you don't know who Bob Goff is, he's written several books. His most famous one he wrote was called Love Does. And he's a professor at Pepperdine Law and has also done an incredible amount of philanthropic work. One day, Bob decided that he wanted to quit trash-talking and insulting people either to their face or behind their backs. And so he decided to say, well, how am I going to hold myself accountable to this? He said, okay, I know what I'm going to do. Every time I insult somebody, every time I badmouth somebody, I'm going to donate to minister at a charity. I'm going to donate $500 per word. That's the correct reaction. Why $500 a word? Well, because he lives in San Diego, and he said about $500 is about the average cost for me to go from San Diego to Maui. And I need to decide if those words are worth more individually than a trip to Hawaii. So much so that now, when he gets that urge to want to insult somebody, he has to truly ask himself, can I afford to say this horrible thing? It's in one of his books, he words it as, now I only say the words that I can afford to say. And I love that perspective, because it's not just the thing where it goes, oh, I'm going to try to be better. No. Let me actually create a system that allows me to be better. And you'll notice that he doesn't say that he's not allowed to be angry anymore. Because this is the mistake that I think we make, where we go, well, listen, like, I got angry today. There's nothing wrong with getting angry. This is something we're trying to teach our son, right? Is that, like, listen, your emotions are an involuntary response. I heard a mom the other day at a soccer game say to her son, you need to control your emotions. And in my mind, I could think, like, that's not possible. We can't control our emotions. They happen to us. We can control our response to the emotions. And so for Goff, the way that he looked at this is not, I'm never going to get angry at another person anymore. No. But I'm not going to allow myself to take an action that I don't want to take anymore. I'm going to challenge myself instead to build them up. I'm going to challenge myself instead to develop community and love and relationship with this person. Because when you and I think about the fact that we were made in the image of God, right? In Genesis 1, it says God created mankind in God's own image. You look at the fact that God spoke into existence relationship. And the reality is, you and me have to do the same. God gave us the ability to speak into existence our friendships, speak into existence our family, speak into existence our community and our relationships. And as much as God gave us the ability to speak them into existence, the unfortunate consequence is we can do the opposite. And the challenge for you and me is not that we learn to stop being angry, but that you and I learn that God has gifted us this incredible opportunity that in that moment of anger, to do something beautiful with it instead, to build them up in such a way that it benefits them, knowing deep down that when we do that, it's going to benefit our own soul as well. So here's the challenge that I'm going to take myself this week, and I want to encourage you to take this as well. I'm going to create a note on my phone. And that note is going to be for me to keep a tally. And I'm going to keep a tally of every single time I build somebody up during the day. I don't want to like make a tally every single time I like say something bad about a person, because I don't want to see that number. It's going to make me feel bad about myself. I want to start by building myself up, and then I want to grow to the point where I can eventually actually like see what's the net difference, where if I start tracking how much I said negatively about somebody and how much I did positively about somebody, can I be in the net positive, and how high on a given day can I build that number up to be? My challenge to you is to figure out whatever scoring system is going to work for you, but actually start tracking the number of times that you either say something that builds up another person or it tears them down. And know that when you do that, every time you do it, you're getting the opportunity to operate the way that Jesus himself operated on the cross. You're getting the opportunity to offer the same love that he said when he said, "Forgive them, Father, they know not what they do." You can be the same. That when he looks at somebody and says, "You are loved, and I can't wait to spend forever in paradise with you," you can do the same. But it's not going to happen if we just go in each and out of every day saying, "I want to try to be better." It's going to go because we're going to challenge ourselves to look ourselves in the mirror, actually look at that number. It's going to happen because we challenge ourselves to donate $500 a word to charity. It's going to happen because you and I make the decision to say, "This is more important." And bluntly, I'm really excited to see what my life begins to look like after a week, after a month, after a year. of tracking how much positivity I can speak into the world in the name of Jesus. Will you pray with me? Gracious and loving God, I thank you for coming into this world. I thank you for giving us the example of Christ, who demonstrated what it meant to speak love and forgiveness and grace over others. God, may we do the same with this incredible gift you've given us, with the power of our own voice. May we use it for the good of you and the good of others. It's in your holy and blessed name we pray. Amen.